Hello, and welcome to the New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook episode for December of 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for December of 2023. Our new moon of the month will be on December 12th in the sign of Sagittarius. And the full moon will be on December 26th/December 27th when it transitions from Gemini into Cancer. Some notable astrological dates. We embark on our December journey by passing through Cancer, Leo, and Virgo from the 1st through the 6th. The moon will be waning during that time, which may feel a little like a dwindling of energy, but you can still make use of those days. This is a time to make plans and organize. Dream big, but also follow through and try to have a clear direction for accomplishing those goals. The 7th through the 10th sees the moon waning in Libra and Scorpio, and you might feel a bit of darker energy building within you. This can be a good time to engage with some of your personal devils, imps, and monsters. Let yourself play with the scary side of things, and remember that very soon you'll be tipping back into the light. On the 11th, we enter Sagittarius, which is the sign we'll be in for our new moon on the 12th as well. Now is the time to begin building that energy back up. Light the fires in your home, or pull out some candles and lights, and open the doors and windows to breathe some fresh air into your space and fill it with luminance. The moon waxes through Capricorn on the 14th, Aquarius on the 16th, and Pisces on the 18th, which means clear your debts to watch your prosperity grow, clear your obstacles to find the paths open before you, and clear your mind to find new possibilities and creative energy. The 20th through the 23rd are waxing moon time through Aries and Taurus, meaning a culmination of that energy you've been building. Not coincidentally, we'll have the solstice on the 21st, a tipping point from dark to light. Wherever you're focusing that power, now is a good time to release it. Have a dance, a feast, or just a little bonfire, and work some good, high-energy magic, then give yourself some time to ground again. The moon is in Gemini from the 24th through the 26th, which will hopefully mean easy conversations and taking some time to share your generosity and your wit. The 26th to the 27th gives us the transition into a full moon, sharing both Gemini and Cancerian traits, which means basking in the glow of those who care for you, or just in the joys of your accomplishments. Take the time to revel a bit. The 29th and 30th see us back in Leo during the waning moon, meaning it's time to clear away those dead evergreen branches and any other dead garden dwellers, while also settling into your shift into the new year and any potential resolutions you might be making. We finish the month again in Virgo, ideal for making more plans for the coming year ahead. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and a proverb for the month. Each month, Lane and I take a chance to pull a card for one another, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general and then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they're read in actual practice. This month, for Lane's playing card of the month, I pulled the Two of Clubs. This means a handshake or a business partnership in the system that I use to read. This card can absolutely be taken at face value, and Lane may well be looking at getting into a new line of business or work, or possibly starting a project with a new partner or friend. This can also be something a little outside of business too, and simply be a handshake, meaning that this month we'll see Lane meeting new people, possibly some who will become important to her and her well-being. Since the clubs are also a physical bodysuit, that could mean meeting new medical providers, especially given some of the difficulties she's had with some of hers in the past. I'm not ruling out that project partner reading either, as a bit of creativity coupled with someone else's would likely pay off quite well, so I'm advising Lane to be on the lookout for good opportunities and interesting people this month.
December's card reading had me asking the deck, what is an obstacle that Corey needs to overcome? The card I pulled for him was the Seven of Wands, the arcana of fire and movement. The illustration shows a man standing on a hillside, surrounded by six staffs, the seventh in his hands. He seems to be engaged in a battle of some sort. And the way the card is drawn in the Rider-Waite deck, There is a forced perspective that makes the figure seem like a giant, stomping over the land and river with just a few steps. The book I often reference for tarot readings, 78 Degrees of Wisdom by Rachel Pollack, says that this is a card of conflict, but describes the battle as exhilarating and intoxicating. It could definitely be seen as a card that signifies winning or coming out on top, but also cautions us to not feel like we need to always be on the defensive.
Our folk divination method of the month, we're going to look at a bit of body lore, especially about hands. You've probably heard the expression, cold hands, warm heart, right? Well, there are a whole range of body-based divinatory practices, and hands, being one of our primary ways of interacting with the world around us, often have some very significant lore. We should probably begin by pointing out that many of these are scientifically unfounded and even outright wrong. For example, being left-handed was once thought of as being particularly sinful or a viceful trait, and those who used their left hand were literally sinister, a term which means left-handed. Additionally, having long arms, fingers, or hands made some people think a person was a thief, again with no real connection to fact. There are a few rhymes associated with hands and fingers too, such as this one from the Ozarks. White spots on the fingernails are supposed to represent lies, and little boys often hide their hands to avoid betraying falsehoods. However, there is a fortune-telling rhyme children use when counting these white spots. A gift, a ghost, a friend, a foe, a letter to come, a journey to go. Even when you trim your nails can tell something about your fate, as with this old rhyme. Monday for news, Tuesday for new shoes, Wednesday for wealth, Thursday for health, Friday for woe, Saturday a journey to go, and Sunday for evil. No extra rhyme on that one. Some common beliefs about itching palms and what they can mean. One, of course, you'll receive money soon, especially if your left hand itches. An old folk belief saying says, rub it on wood, it will come to good when your palm itches. A right hand itch can mean news or a letter coming soon. Spitting on an itching hand and putting it in your pocket can bring money. Itchy hands mean work is coming your way soon. An itchy hand means that you'll shake hands with a stranger soon as well. One bit of lore says locking your fingers together and putting them on top of your head is thought to increase your yoke of troubles, so avoid doing that. And finally, there's a helpful, if a bit unsanitary, but isn't all folk magic a little unsanitary, method for divination. Spit on your palm and hit it with your finger to tell what direction to go when lost or to find a lost item. And now it's time to hand it over to the next segment. Please, no applause for that one.
The Witch's Proverb of the Month. A book is a garden, an orchard, a storehouse, a party, a companion along the way, a counselor, a multitude of counselors. Charles Baudelaire.
No! Our folktale of the month is known as The Gingerbread Boy, a tale from the United States. Now you shall hear a story that somebody's great-great-grandmother told a little girl ever so many years ago. There was once a little old man and a little old woman who lived in a little old house in the edge of a wood. They would have been a very happy old couple but for one thing. They had no little child, and they wished for one very much. One day, when the little old woman was baking gingerbread, she cut a cake in the shape of a boy and put it into the oven. Presently, she went to the oven to see if it was baked. As soon as the oven door was open, the little gingerbread boy jumped out and began to run away as fast as he could go. The little old woman called her husband, and they both ran after him, but they could not catch him. And soon the gingerbread boy came to a barn full of threshers. He called out to them as he went by, saying, "I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man, and I can run away from you, I can." The barn full of threshers set out to run after him, but though they ran fast, they could not catch him, and he ran on till he came to a field full of mowers. He called out to them, "I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man and a barn full of threshers, and I can run away from you, I can." Then the mowers began to run after him, but they couldn't catch him. And he ran on till he came to a cow, And he called out to her, I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man and a barn full of threshers and a field full of mowers, and I can run away from you, I can. But though the cow started at once, she couldn't catch him. Soon he came to a pig. He called out to the pig, I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man and a barn full of threshers and a field full of mowers, a cow, and I can run away from you, I can. Well, the pig ran, but she couldn't catch him. Finally, he came across a fox, and he called out to him, I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man and a barn full of threshers and a field full of mowers and a cow and a pig, and I can run away from you, I can. Well, the fox started to run, but thought better of it, and made a shortcut across the field. Foxes can run very fast, and so the fox soon intercepted the gingerbread boy, and then began to eat him up. Presently, the gingerbread boy said, Oh, dear, I'm a quarter gone. Then, Oh, dear, I'm half gone. And soon, Oh, dear, I'm three quarters gone. And at last, I'm all... And he never spoke again. There's a very good chance you've heard this story, or at least a version of it somewhere along the line. If you kept waiting for me to say run, run, run as fast as you can, you're likely thinking of a version popularized in the early 20th century. The version you've heard is one of the earliest printings featuring a boy made explicitly out of gingerbread, which was found in the St. Nicholas Children's Magazine of 1875. You may also recognize threads from other folk tales, such as The Snow Maiden, in which a couple makes a girl out of snow who eventually melts away, or even the Aesop's fable about the fox and the cheese, in which a fox tricks a crow into giving away his snack. There are lots of ways people can look at this tale and pull lessons from it. Don't be too proud, or you will suffer for it, as the gingerbread boy does. Don't attempt to create life artificially, or it will end badly, as it did for the old couple, right, Dr. Frankenstein? And so forth. But what I want to mention today is that this is what is known as a cumulative tale, a story that builds and adds characters along the way. If you've ever heard things like, For the Want of a Nail, or The Little Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, those are the same sorts of stories. But even more than just that story type, folktale itself is a cumulative exercise. The gingerbread boy tale is a rendition of tales found in places like Scotland and Norway and England, where the main character is often not a cookie, but a pancake or a lump of dough. More recently, the Pixar short film Bao did a variation of this tale using a steamed dumpling. Each retelling adds and removes things. In some versions, such as the runaway pancake versions, the dough creation willingly lets itself be eaten by hungry children or animals, for example, while in many he is outsmarted by a fox or something similarly clever. The type of dough varies widely, as does the group of people the dough boy encounters, blacksmiths, harvesters, and so forth. We, all of us, have something to add to the telling. That's part of the joy of folklore. We carry it forward, maintaining what we think is most important, but we add our little bit of flair and finesse to each telling and make it our own. And we share it with others who will do the same. In a way, that makes stories a perfect thing to exchange during the holidays. They cost us nothing, and we don't mind if they're regifted. Because even if someone does take our version and make it their own, a little piece of us lives on in them and in that tale. A gift that keeps on giving. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time around, we're making cinnamon talisman ornaments. Now, this is something that you may have done as kids around the winter holidays, but if you've never tried it before, making cinnamon ornaments is fun and a great way to create some simple magical charms that won't raise too many eyebrows this time of the year. To start with, you'll be making cinnamon dough, but this is not a dough that you will be eating. There are a couple of ways you can do this using glue or applesauce. Glue will make the talismans more stable and firm, but applesauce works very well and holds together nicely too. We'll be sharing the applesauce recipe since we like it a bit better. To make this, you need about 6 to 8 ounces of ground cinnamon. You can buy it in bulk if you like, or get several small bottles, and about a cup of applesauce. You'll slowly add the applesauce to the cinnamon in a bowl until it becomes a thick, firm dough. Let it sit for a few minutes to make sure all the cinnamon is well integrated, and then knead it a bit more. Roll it out into a quarter inch thick sheet, then use cookie cutters to make any desired shapes you want. If you want a simple circle talisman, just use a glass or a jar mouth to cut them out. Next, take a chopstick and poke a hole near the top of the ornament so you can string it up later. Then take the chopstick and draw your preferred sigil or symbol into the dough. To do something simple, you could do stars or crosses, suns or moons if you like. Or you can be very elaborate and do Solomonic seals or other symbols. Finally, bake these in a low oven around 200 degrees for at least 2 to 3 hours. Your house will smell amazing while this is happening. When they've baked, take them out and cool them for at least 24 hours to make sure they are thoroughly dried. Then you just add string or ribbon through the little hole you made and hang them around your house, wherever you want a bit of extra magic. That's it for this entry into your new World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that you're having a wonderful beginning to your winter season and a wonderful holiday season if you're celebrating. And we apologize that this one is out a little later than we intended to, but hopefully it'll still add a little bit of magic and wonder to your winter season. If you'd like to reach out to us, contact us about anything in this episode or any other, you can do so at compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. You can visit us at our website, which is newworldwitchery.com, where you can find hundreds of articles on North American folk magic, as well as hundreds of episodes of our show. You can support us on Patreon if you like. We always welcome that. That is patreon.com/newworldwitchery. Pledge $1 a month, whatever you can afford. Hopefully get some fun little perks there too. So, and if you're looking for us on social media or trying to find out where we may be making in-person appearances, you can do that at newworldwitchery.com/find-us, which lists all of our media and locations. Well, not exact art locations, but you get the idea. All right. Thank you so much for joining us this time around. We really appreciate it. And we, again, hope that you're having a wonderful December. We'll be back again next month with more Folk Magician's Notebook. And we should be back again this month with some holiday cheer, Yuletide cheer, and other little bits and bobs of magic, too. So until then, thanks for listening. Be well.